Rusty Quill presents.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, welcome to SBRR, a retrospective on Spirit Box Radio. I'll be going through the show part by part, thinking about the themes and my intentions as a writer. These retrospectives will include heavy spoilers for the show, so please go back and listen before you tune into them. Already caught up? Awesome. I'm Ara Major, creator of Spirit Box Radio. Welcome back to the show. This run of episodes, from 21 up to 30, is the first significant shift in the show's tone, I think. I spoke a little bit in the retrospective for episodes 1 through 10 about the way I kind of structured the show's story, but I'm going to expand on that here. Basically, I thought about Spirit Box Radio's story as being like waves climbing up a beach. The waves represent a sense of equilibrium. If you've ever read any storytelling theory or even just engaged with content about how to write, you've probably encountered the idea that a story's basic structure is to begin with equilibrium, which is thrown into a state of disequilibrium, and then a new equilibrium is established by the end of the story. So yeah, you're basically going from a state of normal to a state of abnormal chaos, and then returning to a state of normal. But, you know, normal is relative. It's like, what's normal for the world? Thinking about story in that kind of basic way works and is really helpful for thinking about movies or even shorter series, but for something like Spirit Box, which is intentionally going to run for dozens and dozens of episodes, then you need to think about conflict, resolution, and pace a little bit differently than that.
I won't lie to you. Things have been hard. I keep thinking it will get easier, but it doesn't.
It's still helpful to think of that basic structure, equilibrium, disequilibrium, and then equilibrium again. A longer project means thinking a little differently about the equilibrium in the story. The handy thing about Spirit Box is that it's such a metatextual show. There's the obvious thing, which is that it's an audio drama about a radio show, so Sam is deliberately and actively broadcasting every episode. But there's also the fact that storytelling, words, and narrative play are such a key part in the story and in the character's own individual arcs.
I was standing in my room, looking at the picture of the door with the light around the frame, and I glanced up. It was dark outside, and with the light on in my room, I could see myself reflected in the glass of the new old window, 1,000 drawings of the white door on the wall behind me. But then I realised they weren't the same drawings as the ones on the wall that was actually behind me. They were my sketches, yes, and they were of the white door, but they were organised differently and stopped a few feet short of the ceiling, as though I was too short to reach the rest of the wall.
This is most apparent in Sam, but it's also interesting to think about this in the context of Anna, who can magically detect lies, and also in regard of the Sinconveniences, who literally behave exactly as their names might indicate they would, restricted deliberately in their actions by the story extrapolated from what their name tells you about them. What this does for me as a writer is allow me to quite self-consciously play with the way that the story is interacting with its own structures. There are some ways that this meta storytelling was limited to the way that the show was actually airing as it released, like the fact that after episode 20 there was a mid-season break, and within the story itself, Sam was unconscious for some of that period. But it's also there in the way that I'm approaching the show's literal episode structures and then dismantling them.
It's too much from her just yet. She's very wisely decided to go and do some reconnaissance before actually returning to the house. Even though she's not taking my comments about the house seriously, she did at least listen to the recording of that conversation I had with her that got posted on the forums. You know, the one where she was inside the house and then completely forgot she ever went inside the moment she left? Yeah. Apparently, the sounds of her own confusion was enough to convince her to be at least cautious.
The mid-season break is a great moment to stop and think about this, because it's the show's first really significant format break and shift, but it's actually already been happening every 3 to 5 episodes throughout season one's first part, too. At first, we establish Sam as temporary host. The main conflict is actually a kind of metatextual dissonance between Sam's stated reality, which is that Madame Marie will be back at any moment, and your growing suspicion as an audience member that this is absolutely not going to happen.
Madame Marie's list of contacts. A lot of the people in it seem to be dead or missing. In fact, the only people in there I did manage to get a hold of were Rytidia and Stickler and Stickler, and, well, they weren't interested in coming on unless there was something that they could clean.
This format cracks and breaks when we learn that M was actually Sam's mother. The introduction of this information changes the way that you're thinking about Sam's relationship to hosting the show, or at least, that's what I'm hoping it does. Until that point, we're assuming that Sam's primary relationship with M to be as an employer. She's clearly mean and dismissive of him, but we receive this information differently when we learn that she's actually his mother, and he actually lives in the house that he's been broadcasting from. It changes the way that we're hearing them when they're insisting that she'll be back, shifting it from a hopeful and naive employee certain of their boss's hijinks to this more tragic situation where a guy has been potentially completely abandoned by their manipulative, neglectful mother.
Thank you for your concern on the forums, all of you. I haven't been able to respond to much of it because, well, I've been asleep and it's a lot.
Other format breaks include when we start to receive phone calls from Kitty and Anna, and then again when they actually start coming into the basement studio. The arrival of the phone itself and the introduction of the recording machine, which sits on top of it, also represent moments where what had become familiar and established in the format of the show for the way that Sam is structuring his broadcasted episodes of the Advice and Community segment are broken and shifted deliberately. The phone's presence allows other characters to communicate with Sam in a direct way rather than through letters, and the recording machine provides a sort of balancing hand to whatever Sam is saying.
I know that voice. I don't know where from, but I know it. You're sure they didn't leave a number?
They did not. The message was direct.
Direct?
They didn't phone the studio. The message was direct.
But how could they leave a message on the answer machine without calling?
They spoke to me directly.
They spoke to you?
Yes, shocking, isn't it? People do that sometimes. You're doing it right now.
What? They were here?
By comparison to what happens after the mid-season break, these changes are relatively small. After the mid-season break, Sam changes the literal in-world name of the show, and this is a very powerful act. He rejects the name Advice and Community segment and rechristens the show the Enlightenment segment. Along with this name change comes a shift in their aims for the segment overall. It's not just that he now knows that Emma's dead and so won't be coming back. It's a deliberate assertion of his attempt to use the show to gather information, which we'll learn as the show goes on, is an extremely contentious thing to do within Arcanist spaces.
you all really liked Rytidia's Bogwitch showcase from a couple of weeks ago, and you're all wondering when I'll next be having a guest on the show to make the Enlightenment segment that you were all promised, rather than the Sam guesses vaguely at Arcanism and tries not to make a fool of himself live on air segment. Which is, it seems, what things have devolved into.
This is also a good moment to talk a little bit about Arcanism as a thing, I think. It's meant to kind of mirror the ways that information is withheld and gatekept within communities and by institutions. Who is allowed to know things and which things they are allowed to know has a massive impact on who is able to have power within specific spaces and communities and over society as a whole. The Arcanists are academic gatekeepers, preventing the dissemination of their knowledge to newcomers and deliberately and obsessively refusing to learn from others' mistakes.
I can tell you almost anything you could want to know about the arcane. How it can manifest in good faith in the right conditions, but under the wrong ones, it infests, infects, corrupts, like mould between tiles.
What I'm aiming for here is the idea that they're so keenly aware of the potential power that knowledge can have that they begin to fear and fetishise it. It manifests in this rabid and inhumane individualism that is deeply damaging and isolating both on an individual level, but also on a community level too.
If you seek him but do not search, then you'll find him. A couple of people then got into discussion with Jeremy about the various ways in which this might be interpreted. The most notable response is from Carl, who pointed out that this seems to be a case of surrendering agency.
Within the Enfield siblings as a unit, even, who knows what is a point of deep contention. Sam knows an incredibly small amount, relative to how embedded he is in the world of Arcanism. As we learn later in the show, the reason he has no memory is a deliberate attempt to neuter his immense power, as though preventing him from understanding himself will somehow balance the scales and make it so that his vast magical ability is evened out.
How long was it between us going down there and the room disappearing? It's not something I even thought to ask Kitty before she left. I didn't even know the room was gone. I'd ask Anna, but, well, she's gone too, but with less of an explanation.
Kitty knows about Arcanism, but only from an insider perspective. She's privy to its rules and internal logic, and understands the Arcanist-to-Arcanist social conventions. Anna, on the other hand, has little internal knowledge of Arcanism, but a vast knowledge of the external world. Each of these three viewpoints brings them into conflict with one another regularly, and shapes their views of each other, their world, and their relationships with their memories of their mother.
I've heard other people saying things like that, that Madame Marie came out of nowhere. She was a nobody, and then all of a sudden she's a rising star, making a fortune. But whatever happened to that fortune, I have no idea, because we certainly don't have it now. Madame Marie moved all of what she had in her bank account into mine shortly before she... before.
This is also an incredibly sad moment in the show. Those first few episodes where Sam is reckoning with the loss of their mother were rough to get to. By this point in the run of season one, I had just about started up Spirit Box Radio forums in the real world. The Discord server, which connects a lot of fans of the show. And I started to see real-time responses to the releases of new episodes, something which I found incredibly exciting and inspiring. At this point in the story, seeing how sad it was making everyone that Sam was having such a rough time was really interesting. It hit home for the first time that this show was resonating with people in a way I hadn't fully anticipated.
For those of you offering your thoughts, wishes, and sacrifices at your altars in honour of Madame Marie, I thank you. It really does mean the world. I'm sorry I've not talked more about her today. About losing her. About your kind words. Your thoughts and memories. I think that will have to wait for a while, faithful listeners.
It's a moment where I really felt the drawbacks of a serialised method for storytelling too. If you release a show all at once, when people have it in their hands, they have the ending. They can even skip there to make sure everything will be all right if they want to. With a serial release, though, you're stuck in the moment, and as a listener and a watcher of media, this is something I personally find really difficult, and I have a love-hate relationship with it as a creator. On the one hand, I love being able to get feedback from an audience while the show is ongoing. It's really helpful to know what's hitting right and what isn't, to see which parts are beloved and which parts I could stand to lose. I also enjoy getting yelled at by the audience. It's such a wonderful experience to have a whole bunch of people directly engaging with your work like that, being so emotionally impacted that they yell on the internet about it. one excellent time. On the other hand, I don't like that there's no real way that I can reassure my audience and that the story is going out essentially incomplete. I like to think that my stories work best as a whole, something that's more than the sum of its parts, but there's no way of knowing that until the whole thing is completed.
It's in this sense that it's like water, necessary for life, refreshing and beautiful and utterly divine, but you can still drown in it. And it can still be used as torture. And over time, it will wear even the biggest rock down to sand.
It was also around this time that it sank in for me just how big of a project Spirit Box Radio really was.
Oh, I am so glad that we found you. It's been so long.
Are you someone who likes to listen to new things as they release, or do you find yourself waiting until you know you have the ending before you start engaging with new work? I am so interested to know. Until next time, stay spooky, folks.
Thank you for tuning in to Spirit Box Radio. I've been your temporary... No. I've been your host, Sam Enfield. And I bid you a restful night. Spirit Box Radio is distributed by Hanging Sloth Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 international license. The show was created, directed, and produced by me, Pippin Adomajor, the voice of Sam Enfield. Music is by Maybe Wednesday. Follow us on Twitter at Spirit Box Radio or tweet the sloths at Hanging Sloths. Find out more at hangingslothstudios.com, where you'll also find transcripts of all of our episodes. You can support the show at patreon.com/hangingslothstudios or buy us a coffee on coffee.com/hangingsloths. Spirit Box Radio is recorded in front of a dead studio audience.
Spooky.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time.
That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.